Welcome to Women Wake Up, a podcast that helps you heal spiritually from trauma in relationships, childhood, and early life conditioning to shift from a place of codependency into a divine feminine state of love, harmony, abundance, and joy. On Women Waken, we begin the journey to waken from the illusion of needing to prove our worth into the divine experience of knowing our worth. I'm your host, Whitney Walker. I'm a licensed mental health therapist, and I specialize in substance abuse, addiction, eating disorders, trauma, and spirituality. I'm also a fellow human being who has experienced most of the issues that I explore on this show. On today's guest episode, I welcome the mystical Jessica Falcon. Jessica is a former lawyer, current mystic. She's an international soul embodiment guide and divine feminine activator. She guides women to reclaim their sovereignty and to create freedom in relationships. On this episode, Jessica and I have a really rich and powerful conversation around sovereignty, both for the self and in relationships, how to create sacred unions, connecting with our divine souls and self to truly reclaim our true essence and to find those sacred unions, dating as an empowered woman, and divine feminine power. Don't I love it? So take a listen and enjoy. Hi, Jessica. Welcome to the Women Waken podcast.
Hello. Happy to be here.
Really happy to have you, Jessica. Thank you so much for being a guest on my show. We were connected because you also have a fabulous podcast that I'm excited to be a guest on. Eventually, would you like to tell us about your podcast?
Yeah, it's called the Radically Embody Love Podcast. And it's really about what it means to embody love. It's really easy to have these notions of, oh, love. Yes, love is the answer. Love changes the world. Like, that's great. But if you're only experiencing it in your head and you don't actually know how to live it and breathe it, embody it, and bring that into your daily life, then it doesn't serve you very well, right? So the podcast is about like practical hands-on ways in which you can really do that.
And how do you do that? How do you advise people to actually embody love?
It's a journey. I mean, I wish I could say, oh, quick overnight fix and it's done, but it's certainly not like that. And personally, when I think about embodying love, like what kind of love am I even talking about, right? Like the way we've been conditioned to think about love is not quite how I would define love. And so to embody love for me is synonymous with embodying our soul, embodying our divinity, because our soul is the frequency of love, because our soul is the individuated aspect of the divine, that is us, that has chosen physicality, right? The soul is what forms and creates our physical body, travels with us. And when we start to embody love or embody our soul, however we like to call it, it's really about coming into the self, the true self, the inner world, learning how to access the wisdom within the energy of the body, which is the energy of the soul, and align our choices, our relationships, our actions, our words, our own frequency to that deeper, deeper truth that lives within us. But first we have to access it, right? We access it. We filter out what's not our truth, which is a huge part of sovereignty, because since a young age, we've been thrown all of the stuff, conditioning and beliefs and habits and patterns of everyone around us. And we take that as truth. And that's what the mind sees. That's what the mind identifies with. That's truth. Oh, this is truth. Oh, this is real. Oh, that's not real. That's all in our minds. That's all based on the external. What we've been told, what we've seen. But when we start to go into the body, we access the soul's truth and it rises up and we can filter out what's not our truth.
Beautiful. Absolutely. I'm completely aligned with that. And to me, that encapsulates the concept of the divine feminine. What you just described to me is the action of and the embracing of the divine feminine, because it's about what the unseen. It's about
yes.
what's inside. And we live in a world where we have decided that that is not what we do. We don't take time to go within unless we suddenly are at such an impasse in our life that life is so difficult and challenging that we have to go to therapy and actually look at our emotions. But otherwise, we live in a world that does not encourage us from the time that we're born, which I believe it could do that, that we can shift into that place where we say, this is all you will ever need. There is infinite value, worth, and possibilities within us. There is a true path. There is always sovereignty. It's one of my favorite words is sovereignty, because it means you don't have to look outside yourself for answers. You have all the answers. And when we do that, we stop competing with each other, which again, to me, is a big principle of the divine feminine, is to release the competition and to embrace collaboration, cooperation, working together, because we know I don't have to fight with you because I have my own magic. You got yours. Let's combine forces. Let's not fight for this. And it's just been so ingrained for so long on this planet and in our species that we dismiss it out of hand, right? A lot of people still to this day don't want to go inside. They believe, I don't think there's anything in there. I don't know if I believe in a soul, which is fine. But there's more and more of us nowadays that fundamentally can't comprehend how we don't realize we have a soul. It's just so clear that that's what's real, not like the facade of life. It's your soul. It's your essence. Like that's what's true. Yet we deny it and we turn away from that. And we give very little focus to that. We're so preoccupied with material world, with material things, our job, our money, our fam, all these things. This is the most important. That has to happen first, is reclaiming our sovereignty.
Well, quite frankly, when we are living purely from the external, we're enslaved.
Yes.
Because what that means is, oh, I'm only happy if I have this thing my mind tells me I want, or I'm only going to feel worthy if my partner finds me worthy and attractive, or I'm only going to be safe if I have money in my bank account, or I'm only going to, right? And we outsource love, belonging, safety, all of that. And the reality is that means that you are constantly enslaved to the external. It means the external is constantly dictating how you feel, what you think, who you are, your value, your worth, your capacity, all of that is externally. That's a slave. It means that you are not your own authority. Everything outside of you is your authority. It means you don't know your own identity. Everything outside is your identity. So you believe in a soul or not, no problem. Take it to this pure psychological level. Like, ignore the soul for a second. Do you really want every single thing outside of you to have power over you? Personally, I have no interest in that. I want to be the one in power. I want to reclaim my power from all those external sources. I want to be my own authority. I don't want everything outside of me telling me that, because what that means is I'm a slave to any emotion, to any thought, and I think I'm powerless. And so, of course, I want to distract myself, right? Food, alcohol, sex, Instagram, whatever that is. Of course, you want to distract yourself if you're feeling powerless and helpless inside all of the time, right?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And that's where we find ourselves. That's the world around us. As we begin to open our eyes and see what's really happening here, we are in an enslaved species by ourselves. There's a quote that I love that says, humans are free, yet everywhere we are in chains. And it's just as you described, we are the only ones that put these chains on ourselves. And we claim, oh, but what can you do? Because I have to have a home and I have a mortgage and I have to do this, that, and the other thing. And we're enslaved to it, not realizing that we made these rules. That's another big concept that I think about often, is we created the world as it is. And we can recreate it. We created it out of very masculine principles and very masculine substance, which is all about, just as you described, the things outside of you define you. So you better be really concerned that you get the things outside of you. And then just as you said, then you're beholden to them if you're dependent on them to define you and to keep you alive. Not true. The divine feminine says you are always whole, complete, and perfect and safe. Always. Always. That there, you cannot change that. And everything else is just an addition to it, but you have to trust and have faith that you'll always be taken care of. When we live in fear, we don't believe that. So we create these make-believe concepts. And it just puts us in this place of enslavement and disempowerment. And I know that you probably agree that we're at this point where more and more people are realizing that something has to change. And we are seeing this huge shift in humanity that's never been seen before, because we're about to reclaim our true sovereign selves, the truth about us, which is that we are these powerful, infinite souls that can recreate their world however we want. We can shift. We don't have to keep fighting, right? It always fascinates me if you look, I mean, the past 1,000 years of history, the amount of violence and killing and war is astronomical. It's mind-boggling that we've thought that that's how you have to live. You have to fight for your survival, and you have to fight to have power, because that's the only way that you can live a happy life. And we have to ask, is that true? And the divine feminine offers, it's not true. You don't have to fight for your security. It's innate.
And it's not easy to withdraw from that system, because we are so conditioned to find our safety externally.
Yes. Yes.
So conditioned. And it's not easy. It wasn't easy for me. As I started to extract myself, because I was a criminal prosecutor, I was an attorney for 7 years. I went to law school. I was very much part of the system. And it was not easy to extract myself from the world when everyone around me didn't understand the choices I was making. They didn't understand how I could leave such a successful career, how I could leave a secure paycheck. Even they didn't understand when I left a relationship that wasn't serving me, right? Like, they didn't understand that I chose to live my life from soul and not from ego. They didn't understand. And that forced me to anchor more deeply and deeply and deeply into my soul's truth. And that's how we can navigate that, because it's not, I think the most painful process of waking up, the most painful part of that process of waking up, is the initial stage when we're starting to extract ourselves from the way everybody else tells us to live and the way we've been told that is really safe and really comfortable. But then, like, everything starts falling apart, either by choice, quote, because the choices we're making, or the soul creates situations in our life that force us to wake up. That was my experience over and over and over. Mm. And it was the most painful then. Like, at this point, it's not, right? It's been 15 years of this. At this point, it's not so painful, because I've developed the inner resources. But before we do, and we're in that in-between of I'm leaving this old, but I don't yet know the new, that's hard. And the only thing that's going to get us through that is anchoring into the body, anchoring into the soul, anchoring into love. There's no other way out of it, because it's an egoic death. And the ego, what is the ego? The ego is our limited, purely I'm form, that's all. Physicality is all that matters. I'm separate. That's ego. That's it. It's trying to protect us. It has a purpose. But when we're living purely from that state, right? Not aligning that with our divinity, not aligning that with our soul, then we're always going to feel fear. We're always going to feel contraction. We're always going to feel doubt, because all we can see with our physical eyes is all that's quote real. But when you start to learn how to anchor into the soul, love, body wisdom, live from that internal state, then suddenly you realize, wait, physical isn't all that there is, meaning, oh, there might be other ways of doing this that aren't what I see other people around me doing yet, but I can trust this part of me, because the soul exists beyond time and space. What does that mean? The soul knows more than the mind can ever know. So when we learn how to work with the soul, we're free.
Yes. And just as you described, it's, we can't, we have to return to that place. And to me, it's because it's home. It's what is. It's the truth. And you will always find our way back to the truth, right? And the truth is that we're not our ego. We can go all the way out as far as we can, which I think is what we're where we're at right now, is about as far as you can get into fully identifying as ego. And I've just been reading this book called A Course in Miracles. It's been around for a long time. It's a channeled text, and it's written by higher evolved beings. And that's essentially what they're expressing, is trying to give the message to humanity, which is you're so lost in the ego and trying to live from it that it's causing all the difficulties that you keep trying to solve. It's like you're trying to solve it within the problem. Returning back to ourselves is the only answer. And it's inevitable, right? We'll always return back to source because it's what we are. We'll always return to our soul because it's who we are. And we're seeing, I think, that big turnaround. We're a far way out. It's going to take time. But I think in the next 100 years, the few hundred years ahead, we see this major shift. And I think that in a few hundred years, we're going to live in a way that we would not even recognize right now. The world is going to be so different. And I try to keep that in mind, because sometimes when we look around our world, it's easy to feel like, God, like, how are things ever going to change? Like, everything just feels like a mess. Every single system just feels in disarray. Everything seems to be working against us in terms of, like, we can't seem to take care of our environment because we can't stop using plastics and things that keep us from having a healthy environment and exploiting the environment. And we can't seem to find a healthcare system where people can stay healthy. And at the same time, we're also making people sick by the way that we live and eat. It's mind-boggling. But all of this changes in an instant when we return back to ourselves and the divine feminine, which says honor life first. Honor life, honor yourself, let go of the ego, let go of the fear, and then everything can come back into a balance and take care of itself and others. And I think that's the time that we're going to be seeing we're going to see some changes in the next few decades, but not for a few hundred years, I think, is when we really see like a totally different earth.
And regardless of what other people are doing, I have the power to choose how I live now. I'm already living my heaven on earth, right?
Great.
And so everyone listening, like, it's not like we have to wait for this. It's not like we have to wait for other people to get on the bandwagon before we experience it, because it's really easy for us to go into that, right? Like, oh, later or in the future. Like, yes, collectively and individually, we can do that now. Because individually, those of us who are conscious have that capacity and power to help create the shift for the collective. Because a lot of people aren't awake yet. But if you're listening to this podcast, it means that you are, which means that's actually a responsibility that you have, not even to the collective, to yourself. Because this isn't about just creating change in society. This is about you coming home to you coming home to your soul, as you said, right? It's about you aligning to your soul's truth. This is a very unique soul journey for each of us. And so for some people, their soul is here to experience the complete opposite of their divinity. And that's their choice, and that's okay. And that grieves the souls of us who want love to be on this planet. That can grieve me. That can create grief, because I see the horror that the disconnection can cause and that I've experienced in my own life. And at the same time, I can choose to give that power over me and see purely with physical eyes. Or I can see with the eyes of my divinity. I can be in my own power, the power of love, the power of my divine power, like my divinity inside of me. And I can let my own vision change my perception, change my experience, change my reality, which is a lot of what the Course in Miracles teaches. But even, I would say, even beyond that, incorporating the divine feminine with the Course in Miracles is really about letting that be very embodied, so that we're not trying to get rid of the ego. We're aligning, we're identifying the ego and aligning it to our soul's truth. We're aligning it to love, because the ego has a place. It also wants love.
So Jessica, it really is an interesting perspective you have, coming from being a lawyer and then turning into a mystic and an international soul embodiment guide. So what was it about, can you tell us a bit about your journey? What led you to become a lawyer? What was that experience like being a lawyer? What led you to leave that profession and into the role of a mystic?
Yeah, that's quite a Quite a long answer, so I'll try to keep it short. So I went to law school to do women's rights work. I was the first person in my family to go to law school or to go to graduate school. And I, when I look back, I realized the moment that I felt that if I had a law degree behind my name, people would be more likely to listen to me, which is unfortunately true. And at the time in college, I was working in politics already, the Capitol Hill and the governor's office, and realized that women were not listened to in the same way that men were. And men were automatically given higher esteem than women. And it didn't matter where I was, whether I was in DC or in South Carolina or even later in law school in Boston, like it didn't matter. I just saw that happening. And so I went to law school to be heard. Really. And the irony is that I then became a criminal prosecutor to give voice to those who didn't otherwise have a voice. So the theme here, right, is the reality is I didn't feel heard, but I wanted to give voice to other people who also didn't feel heard. And I became a criminal prosecutor in part because I identified with the injustice and the horror that a lot of people experienced as a result of those who took away their choice through crime, violence. You name it. I loved what I did in the sense that I genuinely cared about justice. I have so much Libra on my chart. That's not my sun sign, but I have so much Libra in my chart, which is all about justice and equality and balance and harmony. And that's just been in my heart ever since a very young age. And I was also very disheartened because I realized very quickly that justice wasn't the name of the game for everybody else in the courtroom. And there's a lot of politics and money involved, and it disheartened me a lot. But I stayed in the system for about 7 years. And during that time, I went through a series of forced wake-ups by the universe, starting with a flood in which I literally lost almost everything I owned in a matter of 5 hours, had to be rescued by firefighters. Watched everything I'd worked so hard for, just purchased my townhome 7 months prior. I watched it all literally disappear and realized so if every single thing I've ever been told to do suddenly went down the drain, practically literally, where does my safety actually lie? Oh, it's not in that house with a mortgage and all the possessions and the job. Okay, so where is it? And then I started seeking out meditation. And then within a year, I had a bicycle accident that nearly killed me and was literally deformed and in my face. And I remember going into the half bath of my mom's house because she was helping to take care of me and looking in my eyes in the mirror at the moment I took off the bandage. Seeing this deformed face looking back at me. And then I caught my eyes in the mirror and I was looking into them. And I had this moment of like, but I'm still me. Like, I look like this, but I'm still me. And then it was like this, I am not my body. I am not my body. I am not my body. And it just was this huge awakening. To realize I'm so much more than I ever realized. And then I was in chronic pain. So then I started seeking out healing. And when I was receiving healing work for my body, I kept realizing, oh, all these old emotions are coming up, and I don't know how to be with emotions. I was very much living from the neck up. And I started to allow myself to feel things I'd never given myself permission to feel. And I realized that as I'm feeling, I could live life more fully. And I felt more joy and I felt more freedom in my ability to just express what I felt, which I'd never been allowed to do. It was not safe to feel. And more than that, I just felt what everybody else felt. I was very sensitive, very empathic, very energetically attuned to what everyone else was feeling. But I had no idea until what was this, my late 20s at this point, to know what I felt inside. That didn't even seem to matter to people when I told them. It wasn't allowed. And to go through this experience of really deepening into my own feeling, my own experience was so powerful for me. And then the more I went into my body, the more I connected with my soul, and the more I heard this calling. And it kept telling me to leave the profession. And I was so resistant because that wasn't at all what my mind wanted for me. I loved what I was doing. I was very successful. And I created this compromise, which I learned, of course, the soul does not like compromises after the fact. But I created this compromise of, well, I can follow my soul's calling to get out of being a district attorney and create a holistic law firm so I can do my legal work from this like soulful, holistic perspective. So I created the first holistic law firm in Charlotte, this huge grand opening, over 100 people, lots of support, referrals right away. I mean, very successful, like immediately in terms of just getting referrals. Like I actually had business coming in the door. And then I went into a dark night of the soul. And I couldn't get off the floor some mornings. And I would turn off the lights and be in the darkness as I now know my wild was coming out. And I really questioned everything even more about myself and eventually surrendered to this deep soul calling to let everything go. All my possessions, all my belongings, my law license, my practice, and go away somewhere for 3 months. That's all I knew. It was so irrational to my logical mind. And in the midst of this, the goddess came to me in a vision and beckoned me. And I said yes, even though I had no idea what I was actually saying yes to. And I was actually saying yes to an underworld journey. And it was not anything my conscious mind would have walked into voluntarily, but it was the path my soul had set before me so that I could go deep into a dark experience that lasted for a long time, in which I was forced to reckon with every fear, every doubt, every piece of shame, every piece of guilt, every single way that I denied myself and my feminine power, my sexuality, and my truth. Like it was so dark and deep and scary. And I felt so isolated and so alone, but my soul somehow kept me going the whole time. And I felt supported from the other world. And in that process, I started to uncover these collective beliefs related to the story of Adam and Eve, related to ancient civilizations, the journey of Inanna, the journey of Lilith, that helped me understand the greater purpose of my quote suffering, so that I could liberate myself from these beliefs and then ultimately liberate others from these beliefs that we have, that have really denied our divinity in form and created this wound of separation that we all deeply suffer from.
Wow, what an incredible journey. Wow, to the depths and back. Would you mind speaking, and if you don't want to, you don't have to, but about, I'm just curious about your accident, because as a woman, I know I've struggled so much with being completely attached to how I look. And I too faced a moment where I was trying so hard to look how I thought I was supposed to look. And I had this revelation one day that said, you can't love yourself from the outside. It's not working. I was trying everything, changing my body, my looks, everything. And it wasn't, I still couldn't do it. And I had that same thought where I was like, maybe you're not your body. Maybe you're not, maybe there's something else there. And again, it just shows you how far gone we are. At that time, I was like, what do you mean? You know, part of me was like, that's stupid. What else could you be? You know, but I felt my heart for the first time. I felt like this light inside. I was like, well, maybe you're that. Like, maybe you're this light that doesn't give a fuck about how you look and doesn't give a fuck if you get enough attention from men. Maybe there's something bigger than that. But I didn't know it. At 24, I didn't know it. So I'm just curious about your experience through that, because you said that you had this revelation of like, I'm not my body, and you had this reclamation and the spiritual awakening. But was it also challenging to go through that experience of that accident and the pain and the recovery and all of that?
I mean, it was definitely challenging. I mean, physically, the pain, and it took time to be able to eat again and chew again and all the things. But I had struggled. It was a deep, deep revelation for me in many ways, in part because I felt my soul in my body, but also because I had experienced so much body shame since a very young age. So much. I hated my body. I would literally punch my belly. I wanted to cut it off. I was overweight growing up and bullied severely, always cast out, always made fun of. Even though I wasn't severely overweight, I wasn't even the most overweight person in the class, but I was an easy target, I guess. And so I always blamed my body for the reason other people didn't like me. And I made my body the culprit, right? It sounds like similar, right? Like, oh, my body's the problem. So if I fix my body, then I'll be accepted or then I'll be loved, right? Which is, again, unbeknownst to us at the time, putting our power out there, giving other people the power to decide, oh, am I worthy? Is my body worthy? Am I worthy because you think I'm worthy? And that's really what that's doing. And so I started to really reclaim my body as my own. And it's a journey again, right? None of this is overnight. This is deep soul work. I started to really reclaim my body as my own. My body as a holy temple. My body as sacred. My body is the expression of my soul and form. Who am I to deny the perfection of creation? Who am I to deny the perfection of creation that is moving through me, that is me? Who am I to deny the life that my soul has chosen in me? And my body contains the divine in every single cell. It was up to me to remember that, to activate that, to allow that to express itself through me. And so one of the things I started doing, this was after I went to Europe, every time I had a thought about my body that wasn't loving, I would literally not give it any attention. I would say the word love, love, love until the thought went away. Love, love, love. That was the very beginning. That was in like 2014, I think, when I was like, really, like, I've got to cut out these thoughts, because the more I gave those thoughts energy, the more they swallowed me whole. And so I would just cut out every single thought. Love, love. I'm not even going to go there. I'm not giving you any attention. I'm not giving you any energy. Love, 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 love. And then I would start replacing the thoughts. But even deeper than that was the embodiment work piece, right? Of really deeply seeing my body not as a thing, but as a, not even a vessel. Yes, it's a vessel, but more than that, as divine, and doing that work of that reclamation.
Thank you so much for sharing that. And then let's get back to your spiritual pilgrimage to Europe. Something that you shared about that experience was that you met somebody, or maybe you went there with somebody, but you expressed that you relived the Adam and Eve story with a soul partner. So I'm so curious what that is for you, because it's great to explore and embody and be within the divine feminine, but we're also looking to, we're working with the masculine, right? We're looking to rebalance, right? Which means the divine feminine working with the divine masculine. So is that what you mean by the Adam and Eve story? Or I'd love to hear about that experience.
So the Adam and Eve story that I experienced was, to me, there is no divine masculine in the story of Adam and Eve. And the divine feminine was suppressed in the story of Adam and Eve. So what I experienced was that, was the suppression of the feminine and the wounded masculine. And I experienced that story because that's the story we've been told. And that's the version of masculine feminine we've been given that we have to change in order to claim our sovereignty and freedom back. Because that story, the story of Adam and Eve, which is in Genesis, the Hebrew Bible, that story was written very intentionally to suppress the goddess, to suppress the divine feminine. And in it, woman was told she was made of man, for man, as his helper, as basically his servant, and that she had no voice and could not speak. that she existed for his benefit. She was not allowed to be free. She was not allowed to choose for herself. She was not allowed to trust herself. And that was what I experienced in the relationship. He didn't believe my body was my own. He didn't believe that I could leave him. He didn't believe that I could choose for myself. And I also experienced the wounded feminine with myself, which was the denial of my own divinity, which is that I didn't trust what I felt. And I saw myself through his eyes, not my own. And so I allowed him to shame me, because what is shame, right? What is shame? We feel shame when we see ourselves through the eyes of another, not our own. And he saw me, I'm going to use what might be a triggering word to some women. He saw me as a whore because I was not a virgin. And I took in his shame of I was dirty, I was tainted, I was not pure. I took that in and I questioned myself. I didn't actually question whether or not I had sex before. I had no regrets. I didn't actually question that. What I felt was shame that he saw me as somehow dirty, that he saw me as somehow tainted, right? That I wasn't good enough, quote, for him. And it really forced me to explore my sexuality, because at that time in my life, even though I was in my early 30s, at that time in my life, even though I considered myself a very sexually liberated person at that time, I didn't have sex purely out of my own desire all of the time or to connect. I often had sex because I felt pressured, because, well, we've gone this far, I guess I should give you what else you want, because I felt power when I felt a man desire me, because I wanted to be wanted, right? All of these, I call them really deep wounds of the feminine, were what were ruling me in my sexual desire, not my pure life force energy and my own heart desire. That was not ruling me, right? And so it forced me to look at that, and it forced me to shift that within my own subconscious so that I could ultimately liberate my own pure divine sexuality and merge my divinity with my sexuality.
Incredible. Wow. And is this something that you work with women on? Because I know that you focus on women really learning how to create sacred unions, but also dating to feel empowered. And also, and another facet that I think that women are learning to embrace is, how do we learn to understand what our personal sexual preferences are, how we experience pleasure from sex? Because it has been so long that we've been told, do whatever the man wants to do. It's more about their experience than yours, just kind of whether you like it or not, just go with it. And women are, it's actually ironic, because women are able to experience like sexual, heightened sexual experiences and energies like to such a high degree, right? Because we have this, our yonis, our womb, which has like many, many expansive layers. It's not just the masculine, but just is like, my friend described it once as they have a delivery, you know, like they come in and they deliver the the load. And, you know, that's sort of what they want to do, like a one-shot deal. But women are expansive. It ripples out our levels of pleasures and orgasm and everything. But how ironic then, which so many things about how we treat women and have conceptualized women is ironic, because we're so powerful. We literally have a portal to the universe through our bodies. But it's just something that we've come to understand and keep ourselves small and keep ourselves, and because we've been so horrifically abused and oppressed and taken advantage of. So how do you encourage women to begin to relearn and understand their unique sexuality?
Yeah, I love that question. So our sexuality is our life force energy, right? Our sexuality, this is where the terminology is important, because in our culture, we have like the word for sex, and we tend to mean that as a physical act between two people, right? Like that's limiting our sexuality to the bedroom, which quite frankly, like our sexuality is our own. Like the first piece is to reclaim our sexuality as our own. because my sexual life force creative energy is mine. It exists for me. It exists for my benefit. The lie, even told in the story of Adam and Eve, is that it exists for man, right? It doesn't. Even though, as women, we've been so conditioned to believe that it does. So the first part is to really reclaim that as your own essence, as your own energy. So when we're activating our own life force energy, this sexual creative energy fuels all of our creations, fuels our pleasure in each moment, fuels our desire, fuels our ecstatic presence with life. And we have to access that through the body. Like, we can't do sexual work through the head alone because we're not generally, hopefully, having sex with our head, right? we're in our body. And for me, like, when I think of like a deep, rich sexual experience, it's not technical. It's not in my head. I'm not thinking about it. I am so fully in my body. I'm so fully present. I'm connected, heart aligned, and I am in my intuition. I'm trusting the impulse. I'm moving with desire. We're connecting. We're weaving our energies. I'm responding to his energy. He's responding to my energy, right? It's a beautiful dance. It's a movement. It's right. So in order to liberate that, we have to liberate our own desire. We have to liberate our own life force energy. We have to liberate our own capacity to feel, to be, to allow, to receive, to intuit, to trust what we feel, to respond to what we feel, to trust that we are wanted, to trust that we are received in love, to trust we are worthy, right? So when we're talking about liberating our sexuality, it is all that. And if we try to just do, oh, just my sex organs, or just my thoughts, or just my heart, right? We're missing the boat. Because it is the integration that actually liberates us.
And how do you understand people coming into sacred unions? Because to me, the sex you just described is a sacred soul connection. Because you're, as you said, we're not just connecting with the genitals, with the sex. You're connecting entire energy fields. You're coming into union with somebody. And that really is like you returning to the dawn, right? In another person. And you know it when you feel it, because it's just, as you said, you kind of lose yourself in those times. Like you're not just feeling like their body. It's like you're feeling every part of the embrace, the energetic embrace, like the whole, whoo, it's just this world. It's beautiful. And when you can experience that, but also feel that you care and love this person and you admire who they are and you respect them and you feel respected by them. Unfortunately, that is, can often be rare. It happens, but so many of us, and it sounds like you were there at one point, and I know I've been there, find ourselves in unions that are not that. They don't feel very sacred. They feel conditional, right? They feel transactional. I'll like you as long as you're filling this need for me. Sound good? Yeah, sure. Okay. Let me see what I can do. I'll try to keep it up. It doesn't feel good. It's draining. You feel so disempowered. Right. And women, I think, especially for so long, have felt so disempowered in being able to actually believe that they deserved a sacred union. So how do you describe sacred unions, and how do you encourage people to be able to create that with somebody? Because I do think also that sometimes they are created. It doesn't always start that way, that two people just come together and it's like, whoa, look at us, this sacred union. You build it together. And I would love to have your perspective of how do you build that so that more women can hear that it is possible.
It's only possible to experience sacred union with another when you've come into union with yourself. Because let's think about it energetically, right? So most relationships, as you said, are conditional. They look like this. Where in case you're listening to audio, like my fingers are intertwined, right? Like hands are together, and we have these energetic cords. Oh, I need you to be this. Hook. I need you to be that. Hook. I need you to be this. Hook. Right. And we hook into each other, and we have these demands, and we have these expectations, and we have these needs. And what we start to do is we start to source our power externally from the other person. Oh, well, because I need you to love me in this way, I'm not going to feel loved unless you do, for example. So that creates this energetic depletion because we're constantly outsourcing. So when we take our power back, all the beliefs, all the ways that we demand, expect, like outsource, and we pull back into the self, and we start to source power internally, we start to reclaim our power back, we source it internally through our soul, through our own connection to our self, through our love. And when we do that, we free ourselves from these needs, expectations, and demands. Now, that doesn't mean we don't have desires in a relationship or hold people accountable or have boundaries. That's completely separate. But we are fully in our own power and sovereignty. Great. At that point, we can love ourselves freely without conditions, which means we have the capacity to love the other freely without conditions. When we can do that, we give them freedom to be who they are. We give ourselves freedom to be who we are. Here's where we have a hard time. So we're like, okay, well, I'm free and this is what I want, so you have to be that now. And it doesn't work that way. Because then what we're still doing is we're telling them, well, you can't be free to be who you are because I'm attached to you being who I want you to be because I don't want to lose you. So I'm going to try to make you something that you're not, or I'm not going to accept the truth of who you are. And so I'm basically going to suffocate you so I feel good and safe, right? And again, most of this is unconscious, but it's happening through our choices and our beliefs. And so when we can really be radically honest with ourselves and be fully in our own choice and boundary and desire, then we accept people for who they are. And a sacred union is not like a, it's not a normal relationship. Meaning if what you desire is a sacred union, it's not like you're going to get on like a dating app and find this person who like meets all of the qualities you're looking for. Your soul is going to guide you to that soul. When both souls are ready, your role is to be in sacred union with yourself and open up the desire and longing that you have for that sacred union and then trust the soul's guidance to receive it and trust the intuitions and trust the impulses. Because I don't believe that, for example, I know there's a lot out there in the dating world of like, oh, okay, you do everything you need to be to do to like be completely magnetic to this person. Yeah, but yeah, and what if that other person is in a relationship yet, working on their own inner union so they could be ready for you? That might not happen in that timing that you think it's going to happen in, right? And so it's there's a mystery there. Because when we're talking about soul, it's not a, I'm going to claim this and it's going to happen or else. That's not the way it works. And so it's deepening into that full acceptance of where you are, the love of where you are, and releasing the ways that you're needing that union, coming into union with self, so that when it arises in divine timing and alignment with your own soul's path and journey and their soul path and journey, that you are able to love unconditionally because you have that for you.
Yeah. And that's so encouraging. And I think important for women to hear, because they're, the challenge that women also face is there's so much pressure to be partnered and there's so much stigma around a woman, God forbid, trying to find their, live their own life and love themselves and have the adventure that they desire and have the full experience of life that they want, rather than feeling like they have to be married by the time they're 30 and have kids by the time they're 32, or else what, or else you're seen as an outcast of society, which is wild. But just as you describe, I think it does people a great disservice, because you, the work it takes to love yourself amidst the messaging and the programming that we get in this world, it takes a lot to return back to that, to clear all that out. The messaging we've gotten since the time we were born, right? Since the time we were in grade school and we were bullied because we looked funny. And we're like, well, shit, I guess I'm screwed. I'm not going to be loved. I need to be afraid. I need to fight for this. We unlearning that and learning to fully fall in love with, embrace ourselves. And just as you described, Jessica, so beautifully, is to remember at all times that you are an expression of the divine. And who are we to criticize that and to not love that completely? And I too, I love that you described coming back to that, just love, love, love. I've developed little things I do when I'm having a thought outside of that, that I'm divine and unconditionally loved. I do like snapping. I do clapping to kind of break away that energy. It's not snap out of it. You know, it's like, I need to get myself back to realizing, how is it serving you to think that way about yourself, to disempower? It's not, but you have to do that over time. And when you are fully in your power, that's just as you described, is when you can find another soul that's ready to meet you at that place. But it takes patience, right? And we are in such a instant gratification world that says, find your person now so that you can post the pictures. And so that people will say, oh, good. Oh, good, good, good. She found someone. Whew, thank God.
Well, I mean, people thought my ex and I were the perfect couple, right? The pictures looked great, but that wasn't the reality of us, right? That wasn't the deep reality. And I think that I heard somebody say one time, it was a friend of mine, she was like, you know, when you're a unicorn, it's rare to find another unicorn, right? Like, so the idea that like, oh, I want sacred union or something really soulful and deep, but I'm supposed to be able to find it anywhere, is not true. It is a deeper journey. And personally, at this point in my life, especially, I have no interest in being in a relationship that isn't soulful and deep. Now, I also, going back to what you said, there are two things I wanted to comment on. One is that, you know, it doesn't mean that it starts out as this deep sacred union, right? Like, you're getting to know each other. You're getting to see who you are. And then over time, you're both capable of doing the inner work, of meeting each other in love, of having that compassion, so that you create the sacred union over time. Because you've got to build the trust. I made the mistake with my ex-partner because I had a voice that told me he was my soulmate and I felt a past life connection. And I made the mistake of believing we had a sacred union right away, which meant I trusted him when he wasn't worthy of trust, because I trusted him instead of trusting myself. And I let things slide because I told myself, oh, this is part of sacred union work. And I didn't have my boundaries because I told myself we were doing sacred union work. And it was okay if it was hard. And it's okay if it's difficult because we're purging. And the reality is, yes, my soul needed to go through all of that. But it's not supposed to feel that. It's not supposed to feel that painful. You are held in a cauldron of love. I say this because there's a lot of crap out there about twin flames and sacred union, meaning it's supposed to be this, it's supposed to be that. You are held in a cauldron of love. When you are in a true sacred union, you are held in a cauldron of love. It is not all of that crap that is just past life purging. You can have that. Your soul can guide you to that, but that's probably not the sacred union you're looking for. And the deeper union has to be within self, has to be within self first. And another thing I want to make sure I remember to comment on is when you were talking about, like, we have these thoughts, right? Huge part of my work with clients is, yes, we have these thoughts. Yes, we need to stop the thoughts. But I wanted to make sure I mentioned, for the embodiment purpose, I think it's incredibly important that when we have these thoughts, that we go into the emotional root of the thought, the emotional energy that is what really wants attention. Because if we have a recurring thought, we've got to get to the root of the emotion, which is the energy, which is in the body, which may or may not be this or past life. And then the thought will naturally clear itself.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I think that any tendency or destructive behavior comes from this deep-rooted belief or fear that's really important to get to the base of. But I do find, because I'm a big proponent of whatever you resist persists. If we just try to push down our thoughts, they'll just come back with a vengeance. But I do feel that towards the tail end of it where I feel I am, or where rather than it being like this sort of intrusive thoughts, they're just, it's almost like a reflex, like just because I've got so used to it, right? My first thought is always like, oh, well, because you're not good enough. Oh, well, because they don't like you. And then I just say, thank you very much. Like, no, thanks. I know that that's just like a little echo of old stuff. So I can let that go now. Versus when it's like really powerful is when there is still like that deep held belief that you think it's true. You really feel like it's true. And that's where you're keeping the energy alive inside of you. And it has, that's when it's important to, just as you said, to go in there and do some excavation and see like, what does that need? What does it need from you to be able to release that energy?
Because it and really, how can we source that thing from within that we're thinking we're missing outside?
Yeah, absolutely. And I found that to be the case. It's fascinating with, I mean, I used to struggle with an eating disorder. I struggled with bulimia. And, you know, it's almost like you have to keep fighting this thing and fighting it. But I personally found that it was when I started doing my own work and healing, the desire to gorge myself and stuff my feelings, it was just gone at one point. Like I didn't feel it. Like it used to feel like I was almost possessed. Like when you have some kind of disorder or an addiction, right? Alcoholism, you feel possessed. You're like, why can't I just stop drinking? It makes no sense. And until you really get to the core, which is a spiritual disconnect, you're going to keep doing that. And you there's no amount of fighting, just as you described, you can't just keep battling it. You'll perish from the fight. You attend to the energy and then it's just gone. You know, I couldn't go on a binge right now if I wanted to. I would just be like, that sounds awful. I don't want to eat for 2 hours. But back then I couldn't stop. Something was like fueling me. So it always is the most beneficial. And that's why I respect and appreciate everybody out there that's helping women specifically, but everybody to address that, address those things that are living within us that's really perpetuating these challenges. Because if you attend to it, it's so much easier to let it just disappear that way than try to keep fighting it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Jessica, thank you so much for sharing your story, for sharing about yourself and your work. Such beautiful insights. And I really appreciate your honesty and wisdom. So thank you so much for being on the show with us today. If people listening would like to work with you, if they would like to listen to your podcast, how can they find you?
Yeah. So it's been such a pleasure. Yeah. I've really enjoyed our ability to go deep into a lot of these. So we covered such wide terrain. It's beautiful.
And we didn't even get to ancient civilization. So guess what? We're going to come back on. We should just do a whole episode about like mythology and ancient civilizations.
Yes. Especially around feminine power. Like that's, oh, that'd be so fun.
Part two.
Yeah, so I'm at thepathtosovereignty.com and all my social media, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, it's all at The Path to Sovereignty. And I have a free gift. It's about creating internal safety. It's a talk and embodiment practice to create internal safety, because I feel like that's at the root, right, of like why we fear our power, why we don't speak our truth, why we don't claim our desires. Like it's all around that capacity to feel safe inside. So this is a little tiny piece of that journey, but I feel like it's really helpful. And I have a couple of programs that work one-on-one to unleash your sovereign power. Ecstatic Soul Embodiment is a 6-week introductory class. The next one starts in April, so I'm not sure when this is airing. And then have an in-person retreat in September in Hot Springs to unleash your inner magic. And then I also do divine feminine power and relationship work. So it just really, like, I wanted to offer a wide array of ways that we can really be in our sovereign power. And the podcast is Radically Embodied Love, iTunes, YouTube, Spotify.
Gorgeous. And I'll be on there soon.
Yes. We're having you in just a month, I think, or so, less than that. Yes.
Because your show is co-hosted, right? You have a co-host?
Yes. My co-host is Ness Barbic. And so we have very similar and yet very different perspectives. So it's a nice week. It's not like we just get on there and agree all the time, right? We have a little nice.
That keeps it interesting. I'm having her on the show as well. So all the beautiful views and perspectives will be incorporated all around.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Jessica. Look forward to connecting again soon. Take care. That wraps up our episode for today. Thank you so much for listening to Women Waken. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with others and come back for more. If you'd like to connect with the Women Waken community, you can find us on Instagram at Women Waken. And if you follow Women Waken, you can get a free tarot card reading if you just send a DM. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day, and don't forget to let your unique light shine into this world.